Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link, your window to the stories making headlines across Africa. I'm Crispin Mwakideo in Bonn.
And I'm Abubakar Jallo, bringing you some of the stories trending on social media.
Coming up, the African Union elects Chad's Foreign Minister Moussa Faki as its new chairperson.
He has worked with the African Union, especially on issues of peace and security. He's someone who was part of the issues of encouraging people to adopt the Charter of Maritime Security, Safety and Development.
U.S. President Donald Trump defends his travel ban amid growing protests.
We're Americans. We're a nation of immigrants. And anybody who says that immigrants need to go home forgets that we were not the first people on this continent.
And I have some of your responses to those stories, and also on a controversial statement by Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni, who said he is not a servant of the people, but rather a fighter.
Stay tuned for these stories, plus a look at the ongoing crisis in Cameroon's English-speaking regions. But for now, here's a chance to catch up with the news from around the world.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. President Donald Trump faced fresh protests on Monday over his ban stopping travellers from seven Muslim countries from entering the United States. A petition against the US president in Britain, demanding that his planned state visit there be cancelled, has topped 1 million signatures. The European Union also vowed to ensure its citizens were not affected by what it termed discrimination caused by the ban. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said the fight against terrorism did not justify putting Muslims under general suspicion. Three African countries have been targeted by the ban, which the outgoing African Union Commission Chair, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, said heralded turbulent times for the continent. UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres, speaking at an African Union summit in Addis Ababa, hinted at the unease while praising his hosts. He did not mention Trump by name.
African nations are also among the world's largest and most generous hosts of refugees. African borders remain open for those in need of protection when so many borders are being closed.
Separately, African Union leaders have chosen Chadian Foreign Minister Moussa Faki as the next chair of the African Union Commission. Gunmen stormed into a mosque in Quebec during evening prayers on Sunday and opened fire on dozens of worshippers, killing six and wounding eight in what Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau condemned as a terrorist attack. Police arrested the two assailants following the shooting in the Islamic Cultural Centre in a busy district of Quebec City. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. A key minister of Gambia's ousted regime has been remanded in custody in Switzerland after applying for asylum. Prosecutors said the measure against former Interior Minister Ousmane Sonko would last for 3 months. Rights advocates have charged that Sonko belonged to the inner circle of former President Yahya Jammeh and that he was responsible for torture, executions and other human rights violations. A British parliamentary committee is launching an inquiry into the spread of fake news. The worry is that particular groups, countries or political parties can set up entire fake news networks. The websites that generate it, other sites that echo it, and social media campaigns that produce and repeat it. The chairman of the Parliamentary Culture, Media and Sport Committee is British lawmaker Damian Collins.
If the primary tool of distributing fake news is people sharing content with each other, and increasingly large numbers of people of all ages use sites like Facebook and Google on a daily basis, we have to be very alive to the problem.
For more news and information, please visit our website dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
You are listening to Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideo.
And I am Abubakar Jallo.
Africa has decided. Moussa Faki Mahamat is the new chairperson of the African Union Commission. He takes over from Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma of South Africa. The AU is also set to discuss an application by Morocco to rejoin the continental body, among other issues which include reforming the organization. From Addis Ababa, Koleta Wanjoy has been describing to me the mood there.
There was a lot of excitement at the African Union headquarters, and we understood that it was Chad that had taken it after we saw jubilations right in the corridors of the African Union. From the jubilations, then we would know which kind of countries voted for Chad, because we had a delegation of Chad standing with other West African countries, including countries like Gambia, celebrating. But of course, for the other candidates, a bit gloomy. For Kenya, that was really highly expectant to take the chairperson's position, the Kenyan delegation is really discouraged. They feel that probably they did enough, but probably what they did was not good enough, as has been seen by the elections results. However, we have to understand that the elections we are told went for 7 rounds, and actually Mr. Musa Faki won on the 7th round, followed closely by Kenyan candidate Amina Mohamed.
So what went wrong for Amina Mohamed? As you say there, she was one of the candidates that was most likely to succeed Lamini Zuma.
We understand there's a lot of political issues that really came up. For example, we had issues of her being accused of being corrupt. These were stories that were sent out from Kenya. And these are issues that were sent into the African Union corridors just about yesterday night, circulating around the corridors. Also, secondly, there's an issue of political issues, because we know the candidate Amina Mohamed spoke about the issue of Morocco and Sahrawi right from the beginning of her campaign. She even made a trip to Sahrawi Republic. Now, this angered African countries that do not support Sahrawi, and African countries that have in the past year supported Morocco. So news that we have is that probably Morocco really did a lot of decampaigning of Amina Mohamed.
Okay, so now there's a man at the helm of the AU, Musa Faki. But what qualities now does he have that gave him this AU top seat?
Mr. Musa Faki is the current or foreign affairs minister of Chad, but he's someone who has really worked his way up towards the African issues. He has worked with the African Union, especially on issues of peace and security. He's someone who was part of the issues of encouraging people to adopt the Charter of Maritime Security, Safety and Development. He was also part of the issues of assisting the African Union to make a strong decision on financing of the African Union, finding internal financing. And recently, when the Boko Haram issue came up, he was right in the middle of the response that Chad gave in a bid to stop the issues of Boko Haram really harassing the Lake Basin region.
DW correspondent in Addis Ababa, Koleta Wanjohi.
And Crispin, some responses now to the election of Musa Faki Mohamed as the new AU chair or AU Commission chair. Matthew Akasin said the new AU Commission chairperson should speed up the unification of the African continent, because that is the only way we can fight oppression and tyranny and become a world power. And we have Cornelius Machen, who said Africa must progress and not regress.
Moving on to the United States, where a travel ban imposed by President Donald Trump on 7 predominantly Muslim countries continues to receive international backlash. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation, OIC, on Monday said the ban emboldens extremists. Iraq, which is one of the countries affected, has vowed a reciprocal ban. But Trump's White House insists that the measure is meant to secure the homeland amid chaos and protests at various airports in the U.S. Dagmar Vitek reports.
They're defying snow, ice and rain to express their anger. Trump's crackdown on immigration continues to raise tempers across the U.S. Tens of thousands took to the streets of Washington, New York, Boston, Michigan and Pennsylvania.
We're Americans. We're a nation of immigrants. And anybody who says that immigrants need to go home forgets that we were not the first people on this continent.
There were also demonstrations at U.S. airports, like here in Miami. Travelers from some of the 7 mainly Muslim nations affected by the ban have been detained, even though they hold valid visas or green cards.
It really hit me very deeply, I think, as a Venezuelan who immigrated, because my family faced political persecution, and I know what it's like to not be able to live in your country, to not feel safe. And I feel so sad for these people who are already vulnerable, and we're detaining them.
Despite the protests and widespread international criticism, President Trump is standing firm. He's called his executive order, quote, a massive success. His spokesman also defended the travel ban.
It's a 90-day ban to ensure that we have further vetting restrictions so that we know who's coming to this country. The safety of the American citizens, the safety of our country, has got to be paramount. And that's what the president did, to ensure that the people that we're letting into our country are coming here with peaceful purposes and not to do us harm.
Demonstrators here do not agree.
We stand up for what America is really all about: openness, acceptance, and diversity, not the isolationist and the fear and the hate that our so-called president is trying to portray.
Discontent is growing. Even some prominent Republicans are criticizing Trump's latest executive order. Democratic lawmakers say they intend to introduce legislation to overturn it.
Dagmar Vitek compiled that report.
And Crispin, to a story that is slightly related to this. In Canada, gunmen opened fire during evening prayers, killing 6 people and injured 8 in the eastern Canadian city of Quebec. The Quebec police have arrested 2 of the suspects. This response from Percy Fifi King said, what was the president thinking when welcoming immigrants? I guess this person is foreign there to Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. Since other countries did the same and now facing rejections in the upcoming elections, now Canada has been put on target. And we have Dan B. Waters, who said one of the 2 suspects of the attack is a Moroccan origin. It is not looking good for those screaming Islamophobia.
Well, thanks, Abu. We'll keep that story. I will keep following that story. Now let's move to Cameroon's English-speaking regions, where the crisis there is worsening after the government intensified its crackdown on journalists and protesters. The demonstrators have been calling for an end to what they say is discrimination by French-speaking authorities. But Yaounde has responded by arresting English-speaking opposition leaders, blocking the internet and intimidating journalists from reporting about the crisis. Christina Kripal has been speaking to Peter Nkanga, the West African representative for the Committee to Protect Journalists.
Cameroon authorities must realize that attacking the press is not the solution to the social, political, even economic problems facing the country right now. The government must stop these deliberate attacks on the media and instead engage the media in efforts of resolving the crisis. Because going after the media is only trying to make it obvious that you are going after the people. And if you really want to solve a problem, it's about interactions, about dialogue, it's about discussing with people who have differences than others than yours. And that is what the media is also supposed to serve as, that intermediary between the government and the people.
Can you tell us something about complaints you have been receiving from Cameroon? Are there concrete complaints and what do they say?
My constituency, which is that of journalists, is that the National Communication Council, that Cameroon's media regulatory body, is simply just showing itself as a willing tool in the hands of government to be used to trample on freedom of expression and freedom of the press by banning outrightly, by sanctioning the media for simply engaging in the discussion that the people of Anglophone Cameroon, that is the Northwest and Southwest, want to engage in.
Peter Nkanga, West African representative for the Committee to Protect Journalists.
And Crispin, I have some responses there. But first of all, Edward Snowden put out a report on Twitter that Cameroon is threatening citizens with prison via mass SMS after there was this Twitter hashtag campaign, bring back our internet. And he said Anglophone internet blackout is continuing. And people have been responding to that. We have Jordan who says this is horrifying. Le Beret Gascon said, Snowden, please stop RTing this. Once he hears about it, you are going to give real Donald Trump ideas. I guess
it's a bit funny.
It is, eh?
But again, it's a very critical situation.
It is. It's sort of hard to describe right now because you'd see from these responses here. This user said, you mean once he figures out what Cameroon is? Bit sarcastic there. And then Lou Beret Gascon also responded, he probably thinks Cameroon is the ex-prime minister of the UK. it's interesting.
Very funny.
Yeah. And then so another user said, embassies have been so silent about this and it's fishy. There must be unreachable tourists in those region. And then someone also said, Snowden, thanks for being on our case. We, the citizens of English-speaking region of Cameroon, are very grateful. And then let me give you some responses there to this mosque attack in Quebec, Canada. Sula said Muslims make up less than 1% of Quebec City. All Canadians love Trudeau, that's the prime minister, and is welcoming of a whooping 25,000 Muslim refugees last year in such a huge country. And guns and mass shootings are exclusively a US problem.
Thanks, Abu. Keep it Africa Link. You're listening to Africa Link. And still to come, Miss Cameroon is stripped of her beauty crown, but why?
As a model, if she wants to do politics, she should hand over the beauty crown and practice politics. The two activities cannot go together.
A statement by Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni that "I am not your servant" has sparked outrage online.
All that and more in the next 15 minutes. But first, let's head to Cameroon, where authorities have stripped off Miss Cameroon of her beauty crown. They accuse her of involving herself in what they call unprofessional activities. Although no official statement was made as to the reasons behind Julie Franklin Cheugweu Nguimfak's dismissal, she has been accused of supporting strike actions by professional groups of the English-speaking regions. Moki Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
Miss Cameroon Julie Franklin Cheugweu has been stripped of the beauty crown for allegedly being involved in an ongoing dispute between the government and English-speaking communities. Solange Ingrid Amugu, president of Cameroon's beauty pageant community, says the miss was punished because of her involvement in the country's politics.
Elle est un modèle et elle doit bien faire la promotion de notre pays.
As a model, she is supposed to promote the image of our country. She's not there to create disorder. She is not there to practice politics because we are not a political organization. If she wants to do politics, she should hand over the beauty crown and practice politics. The two activities cannot go together. There should be discipline in everything we do. Miss Cameroon has not been respecting the engagements she was elected for. When we informed her, we were 3 months from the election of Miss World and she should concentrate and start preparing, she refused. Those are the reasons that made us to strip her of her beauty crown.
Despite the misconduct allegations, Julie Franklin had reportedly advised the government to listen to the concerns of English-speaking Cameroonians complaining of marginalization from the French majority. She tells me that she was not officially informed of a decision to take away her crown.
I realized that I was not more Miss Cameroon online like other people. I'm not thinking of giving up Miss Cameroon that Cameroonians elected. They simply removed their crown. But I have my project. I'm not in the political party. I'm simply doing what a miss is supposed to do. Concerning Northwest and Southwest, we are a united nation and peace is everything. That's the only advice.
The beauty pageant organizers have replaced Miss Cheugweu with Minkata Akomo Michelle Ange Sandra, the first runner-up in the competition. Sandra knows the task awaiting her, she says.
There's nothing like frustration or any pressure coming from the committee. You know, before being the president of the committee, she's a mother, she's a mom to us. So if we go astray, she's supposed to get us right. First, to fight against stigmatizations and fall down barriers, I want to promote the multiculturalism of the country. I am quiet, I am comfortable.
Cameroon government has shut down the internet in English-speaking regions and has threatened to put in jail the people who share what the government calls false rumors.
Moki Kinzeka reporting.
Health check.
The World Health Organization says sub-Saharan Africa continues to carry a high share of the malaria burden. Most malaria cases and deaths occur in Africa. Rwanda's Ministry of Health says that in the last 4 years alone, nearly 4 million Rwandans suffered from the disease. The officials say despite efforts to combat malaria, the numbers continue to go up. From Kigali, Nasra Bishumba filed this report.
This is the Kigali Polyclinic Medical Center in the Kigali City Center. The clinic's waiting area is sitting double the number of patients than it's supposed to. Women carrying babies on their backs wait impatiently for their turn to see the doctor. Over the last 1 month, the number of patients at this clinic and most other hospitals has been increasing, mostly because of malaria infections.
it's important that they do something early enough. Malaria is dangerous, especially when it comes to small children. I just hope that solution can be found.
According to the Minister of Health, malaria cases increased from slightly half a million in 2014 to over a million in 2015. 500 people were reported dead because of malaria in the same year. The head of the Malaria and Other Parasitic Infections Unit at the Rwanda Biomedical Center, Dr. Aimable Mbituyu Muremi, says that the warm weather is the main reason for the surge in malaria cases, and mosquitoes have become resistant to various anti-insect sprays.
Malaria has been increasing since last 3 years, mostly due to the season. That's why after the end of the rainy season, when the temperatures start increasing, we have also an increase of malaria cases countrywide. For example, November cases, we have registered around 700,000 cases countrywide. You noticed the resistance to insecticide, and we have been spraying using a new insecticide, and we hope that this will be effective.
Jean Damascene Turinimana is a taxi driver and a father of two. He tells me that his daughter has had malaria and the only way to defeat the killer disease is by sensitizing the masses.
When you go around the country, you find many people with malaria issues, mostly because some are still surrounded by the bushes and stagnant water. We try to protect ourselves from malaria, but for example, when I go to work, the ones I leave behind home tend to delay to close the windows early enough in the evening, so we are likely to suffer the consequences of being bitten by mosquitoes. What can be done is to perhaps concentrate in sensitization programs, to use mosquito nets, and to follow doctor's advice.
Dr. Mbituyu Muremi said that the government is also treating the country's poorest patients free of charge.
Another intervention is spraying, targeting, of course, the high burden district because we cannot afford spraying all over the country. Training community health workers, and the community health workers are well equipped to diagnose and treat the malaria at community level. For people falling under Oweddehe 1 and 2 are receiving treatment free of charge.
The Ministry of Health says that malaria is the fourth most deadly disease in Rwanda after neonatal, lung and cardiovascular diseases. It could take years for the new interventions to have a real impact on the number of malaria cases.
That report was compiled by Nasra Bishumba in Kigali. Let's now dive into the world of sports. Chuck Penfold joins me now. Chuck, the stage for the AFCON semi-finals is now set. Egypt will square it off with Burkina Faso while Ghana meets Cameroon. Which teams do you think will make it to the final?
Well, I think Burkina Faso are clearly the outsiders here. I don't think anybody expected them to get that far, so I think Egypt will probably go through on that side. Between Ghana and Cameroon, I think it's a toss-up. Cameroon have a really hot goalkeeper, and perhaps the fact that several players that were picked for the team decided not to go has helped forge them into a stronger team. Ghana have the Ayew brothers and maybe the higher-profile coach in Avram Grant, so I think I'll go with Ghana there.
Let's now turn to the Bundesliga here in Germany. There was a big win for FC Cologne over the weekend, beating, I think, Darmstadt 6-1, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, that's right. I felt a bit sorry for Darmstadt here. Of course, they're the league's worst team, at least in the standings. They're at the bottom of the table. They got unlucky when their captain, Aita Kasulu, turned the ball into his own net to get things started for Cologne. Then with a score 2-0, Anthony Modeste, the big scorer for Cologne, could have actually been sent off for sort of forearming, almost elbowing an opponent. A few minutes later, he scored, and then that's when the roof really started to cave in with Cologne, as you say, going on to win 6-1.
And then Leipzig also ended Hoffenheim's unbeaten run finally.
Yes, that was a matchup of what's been dubbed here in Germany the plastic clubs, due to how they were created essentially by big investment about 10 years apart. Some have called it the Plastico, compared to the Classico, I guess, between Real Madrid and Barcelona. Leipzig won at home 2-1. The winning goal came out, though, after Hoffenheim had gone down to 10 men after Sandro Wagner was sent off for a nasty foul.
And, Chuck, Bayern Munich still leads the table after a 2-1 win over Werder Bremen. Is there any chance of Leipzig now catching up with Bayern?
Well, with, you know, we got 16 match days to go, so it's certainly possible, but I tend to think it's unlikely. Leipzig are playing very well, but Bayern have the experience. They may not be firing on all cylinders so far this season, but their record is very impressive. They just keep collecting the points, and they've only lost once this season. Now, when they really had to turn on the afterburners, which has been rare, but it was against Leipzig, and they did, winning 3-0 before Christmas. So I'd say my money's on Bayern, but you never know. They could stumble at some point. They could be hit by injuries. And if that happens, Leipzig will be, you know, trying to capitalize. We've got a long way to go in the season, basically.
Let's talk about tennis. Roger Federer finally won that elusive 18th Grand Slam final, beating his arch rival Rafael Nadal at the Australian Open. What do you make of that?
I think it was a great day for tennis. The Australian Open was an extremely interesting tournament this year. I think I sort of got the sense, maybe about halfway through the tournament, with the way, you know, watching what I could with both Federer and Nadal, the way they were playing. Both had come back from being injured, and both seemed to be really fit for the first time in a while. And you got the impression, watching, there was a certain determination and confidence. And, you know, Federer is 35 years old. I think he actually said today he wants to play for a few more years, which would really be something. Nadal, you know, it was a really tough match, and Federer after the match said, "There's no ties in tennis, but if there were ties, I would happily share this with Nadal." So, just a great story.
DW Sports editor Chuck Penfold.
And Crispin, now to Uganda. Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni's controversial statement that "I am not your servant" has sparked outrage online. The country's longtime leader used an occasion marking his 31-year reign to dismiss a statement by his arch-rival Kizza Besigye, who had been quoted by local media as saying that Ugandans are the masters and leaders should be their servants. Museveni said in this statement on a tweet on a video by NTV Kenya, he said, "I am not a servant of anybody. I'm a freedom fighter. That's what I do. I don't do it because I am your servant. I am not your servant." And that's actually, we have so many responses here. Let's start with Dick Misika, who said, "Whose freedom is Yoweri Museveni fighting for? If anything, he is fighting against freedom of the majority of Ugandans and fighting for freedom to steal from Uganda's coffers." We have Nzereko Lawrence, who said, "He is still dismayed by the fact that people never voted for him. If it wasn't for his electoral commission, he would be former president of Uganda." And we have Isaac Mburi, who said, "Nancy Mandela spent 27 years in prison and many more years fighting equal rights in South Africa, then spent just 4 years as president of South Africa. Now that is a true freedom fighter, but he never ever said he was not a servant of his people, though he wasn't. Mr. Museveni is just arrogant like all other African leaders who have stayed in power for a long time." Crispin, what's your take on that?
Well, it's unfortunate. I think that's a statement that really baffles and also shocks me that a leader can come out and say that he's not a servant. Actually, the presidency should be a public office, and that means that he should be a servant of the people.
Yes, if you do compare it to leaders in Europe here, you'd see how politicians in Europe restricted by so many things. For example, German Chancellor Angela Merkel keeps a very small private home.
Exactly. And where we have in African leaders who just, you know, when they get to power, they amass so much wealth, they steal, they grab, and they do everything. And they don't consider themselves as servants. This is really unfortunate.
Yeah. Okay, let's keep some more. Let me read out some more responses here. We have Stelake, who said, "He's not a freedom fighter, but rather a rebel fighting democracy in the country he helped liberate. Poor Ugandans are working day and night to pay taxes, which he, his family, and the chosen few have embezzled to their fullest." I also have this sort of response here from Saini Sawane, who says, "What such like this can cause him an upcoming election? Did as a servant of their people." And then Marshall Carter said, "This, my president, is becoming older, and his PTSD levels from high due to Basige's previous walk to war campaign and liberation wars of those days. This old man wants to rest, but he is scared." And we also have Wani, who said, "This guy is getting old and becoming delusional. I expect more controversial statements from him." Well, Let me read this final statement here from Ronald Muhidi. He said, Mr. Museveni is absolutely right. Dictators are not servants, but masters.
Thank you, Abu, and thanks to everyone who contributed. Before we go, a quick reminder of our main stories. Moussa Faki has been elected new chairperson of the African Union Commission. As always, you can get the show as a podcast. Visit dw.com/Africa. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And Abubakar Jallo here.
Goodbye. Take care.